Well, look, if you came to me and offered to pay me what I'm making now and tell me that I could stay home, I'm going to certainly think about it.
Hi, I'm Nick Gillespie with Reason TV, and today we're talking with Michael Tanner. He's a senior fellow at the Cato Institute, and he's the author of Work versus Welfare Trade-Off 2013. Michael, thanks for talking to us.
It's a pleasure to be with you.
Okay, this is a fascinating study that's generated a lot of feedback and commentary and analysis. Essentially, what you're doing is updating a 1995 report where you looked at the benefits of welfare programs versus the benefits of low-wage work. What do you find?
Well, what we found out was that very little has actually changed since 1995, that in many ways, welfare still pays better than work, at least in a great many states.
Okay, yeah, and you have you found that in 18 states, welfare does pay less in adjusted inflation-adjusted terms than in 1995, but also that welfare pays more than the minimum wage in something like 35 states.
Welfare pays more than minimum wage in 35 states. It pays better than $15 an hour in 13 states, and in the eight most generous states, it actually pays better than a $20 an hour job.
Is there a correlation where welfare pays more that you see fewer people in the workplace or higher unemployment rates, things like that?
Well, we weren't able to actually match unemployment rates or welfare participation rates with the level of wages. What we were able to find, though, is that those states that tended to have very generous benefit packages had relatively few people on welfare participating in their welfare-to-work programs.
Okay, yeah, and this is part of the backdrop of this, is that in the welfare reform that was done in the late 90s, or after 95, that was the linchpin, right, that people had to work in order to get welfare, but you're finding that that's impetus has kind of faded over time?
In many ways, that was the biggest surprise to me in doing this study, because I had been pretty much convinced that as part of the reforms that Clinton and the Republicans did in 96, that we're moving everybody from welfare to work, and that if you were going to get benefits, you were going to have to work from now on.
Right, and we did see in the 90s, in the late 90s, or in the wake of that, massive decreases in welfare caseloads. Right?
Yeah, caseloads went down, and interestingly, poverty rates went down, child poverty went down, black child poverty went down. But what we found now is that only nationwide, only about 42% of people in welfare were actually participating in work. And work was pretty broadly defined there. That includes job search, which is looking for work, or job training programs, going to college counts as work. And only about one in five was actually in a non-subsidized job. So we really aren't moving people from welfare to work anymore.
Somewhere in the study, you say that it's been noted that the highest marginal tax rate paid by people is actually people who leave welfare and go to work and lose their benefits. Could you explain what you mean by that a little?
Sure. Well, welfare benefits are not taxable, but wages are. If you were earning a dollar on welfare and you left welfare and took a job and earned a dollar in wages, you would have to pay taxes on that. Don't forget the payroll tax starts at the first dollar you earn. There's no exemptions, no deductions, anything like that. So that's a huge marginal tax rate when you leave welfare for work.
Can you give us a kind of estimate of, or an average of how much it does the welfare compensation package, what is the equivalent in a wage?
Well, it really varies a great deal from state to state. In a state like Mississippi, which had the lowest, it was around $16,000 a year and change, which isn't that great. But in Hawaii, you'd have to have a job that earned as much as $60,000 a year to break even. So it's a pretty broad spread.
Right. And essentially, the argument that you're making here is that if you have to make a job, if you have to make $60,000 in order to get the equivalent of what you might be able to pull in on a welfare program, Max Weber couldn't come up with Protestant work ethic people that are going to do that, right?
Well, look, if you came to me and offered to pay me what I'm making now and tell me that I could stay home, I'm going to certainly think about it. Because work is actually a sacrifice. I mean, when you go to work, there's financial sacrifices involved, child care, transportation, the clothes you have to buy to go to work, things like that. And there's loss of other things, too. There's loss of leisure time. If you're a mother with small children, you're not going to get to be home and see those children grow up the same way. Work is hard. So you have to take that sacrifice into account and balance that against the possibility of income and advancement and things like that. It begins to get tougher when you have to throw welfare in the mix.
What you're basically saying is that, work is hard, and if you can get something close to that without working, a lot of people are going to take that.
Sure. I mean, people on welfare, there's no evidence to suggest they're any lazier than the rest of us. but they're also not dumber than the rest of us. And if you offer them the same incentives, that's what they'll do. Well, we suggest a couple of things in the short term. Number one is we really need to look at those work requirements again and go back to the idea that if you're going to collect welfare benefits, then you must work. The idea that you can have a state like Massachusetts and only 18% of welfare recipients are even in the broad definition of work, that's just a disgrace. We need to deal with that. And second, we need to consolidate all these different welfare programs in some way and begin to put a cap on it. Just recently, Britain capped its welfare payments at £500 a week. You know, we're starting to fall behind the Europeans when it comes to welfare reform. That suggests we need to rethink this.
Speaking of foreign countries, one of the critiques I saw of this study, it was not actually about the methodology or the conclusions, but it said, look, if we have these generous welfare programs, you know, Cato is an open borders libertarian outfit, you know, Reason also big on open borders. How do you respond to the criticism that, yeah, you've documented exactly why we cannot allow immigrants into the country?
Well, a couple things on that. First of all, Cato has actually advocated that we wall off the welfare state rather than walling off the country. We've suggested let's cut off benefits for welfare to the new immigrants. We still think they're going to flock to this country because we're still the land of opportunity. The second part of that is, though, is that immigrants actually use welfare benefits at a lower rate than native-born Americans. They're not coming here for welfare. They're coming here to work. And second, they actually add to the prosperity and economic growth in a country. Now, if you look to states that are doing really well in terms of economic growth, they tend to be states that have high immigration. It's basically, when they come to this country, they improve the economic conditions for everybody, raising wages for everybody.
All right. Well, we'll leave it there. I want to thank Michael Tanner, senior fellow at the Cato Institute and the author most recently of Work Versus Welfare Tradeoff. Thanks for talking to Reason TV.
My pleasure.